So we, in the last shiurim, we've been addressing what is really the, I think, the most fundamental discussion in the Gemara about a social and political organization. This idea of the koach b'nei ha'ir, lachuf ze'ezeh for the tsarche ha'ir. Are we in agreement about that? Just, you see this, I think this is one of the most fundamental discussions in the Gemara. The Gemara discussion itself is not so rich. We're going to see, in the next daf, we're going to see a continuation of this power of the B'nai Ha'ir. When the Gemara discusses, anybody get to this? What do you see in the next daf? The idea of Rashayim B'nai Ha'ir La'asiyah Al-Kitzasam, which is a natural continuation of Kofin Zezeh Livnos Beishar. So that's going to be an expansion of what the B'nai Ha'ir could be mitaking and what they could compel each other on. Right now, we've only seen the first half of, you know, Beishar, Deles, Choma, all the things that are necessary for the security and the utilities of the ear or the mavoi. Okay, but we're going to see an expansion of that to other areas of political control. Now, at the heart of this discussion is what I take to be a presupposition of the sugya, which is that there's just some fundamental authority that the B'nai Ha'ir have against each other. So there's some political or social control that the community has over its constituents. Does that sound correct to all of you? Now that is the key question in general in political philosophy. We want to know what gives people the right to control the lives of other people. Why should people in charge get to boss you around or boss the constituents around? And the halacha here doesn't get deep into the theory, but it does tell us that the B'nai Ha'ir as a whole, or the ear or the mavoi as an entity, has this power, this sovereign power over its constituents. So one thing we want to investigate is what type of authority is that? And where does this halachic power come from? And what are its limits? And how does it relate to other areas of power or authority that we know of in the system of Jewish law? Okay? If you had to take a stab in the dark, how might you characterize this power? And where might the authority be derived from in the Torah? You have to take a stab at it. I'm not sure everything needs a source in the Torah, or in Tanakh, but... Hey, Don?
Yeah, maybe that, like, you have the wisest people making the decisions for everyone. They're going to make the best decision.
Okay, so just the smartest people get to rule, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see that that's against the view of some of the Rishonim we're going to see today. The ones who characterize the Tuvei Ha'ir. So... bring that up when we get to that discussion in a few moments. Shmuel?
Maybe just like Bittel Barov.
Ah, so Bittel Barov as in just the Rov gets to decide. Yeah, so maybe there's just an assumption of Ache Ravam Lahatos. So on all issues, there's the power that the majority has. That's still a big chiddush because, you know, that applies in the Gemara with respect to, in the Chumash with respect to Bezdin. But to extend that outside of judicial power for courts that are divided on some question to, for tikkun hayishuv, for the B'nai Ha'ir, you know, closer to political decisions, to just say that the majority gets to rule, it's a chiddush. But you're right that some Rishonim seem to be leaning on that. So you might say, okay, it's just a koach that the rov has on all issues. We know that for disputes of halacha, you defer to the rov in some cases. Daniel, you look very troubled.
No, I'm just also like, we also have a concept in Judaism of having a monarchy.
Yeah, the melech, right?
Right, where does that power come from?
Yeah, where does that power come from? Good. So this is why I wanted to assign the Drasha Saran. I doubt anybody got to it yet. But I added it to the source sheet, the Drasha Saran in Drasha Yud Aleph, where he talks about the halacha assigning powers both to the shoftim, who are in charge with interpreting and deciding halacha. We could think of, I guess how we would think of poskim today. And then a separate power that the halakha assigns to the melech. And the melech, the Ran says, is tasked with deciding all political and social questions. When to declare war. How to raise taxes. What kinds of streets should be built. You know, what kinds of public goods are good for everybody. So in the Ran's analysis, which we'll look at, if not today, then early next week, the Ran thinks that just there's this halachic authority that's divided between, let's say, halachic decision-making, which goes to the shoftim, in the sense of shoftim, b'shoshim, titei mecha, and the powers that are given to the melech, who is tasked with making all these political decisions. Okay? And then, I think Daniel's point could be applied to this discussion of Rashayin B'nei Ha'ir. You know, even if it's not necessarily a monarch or a melech who sits with a crown on his head, the point is that there's a separate area of halacha or a separate halachic power that's assigned to social and political organizations. And in this case, it becomes the B'nai Ha'ir. Yes? Okay. Now, that's going to raise separate questions. I'm just going to say for now, I'm going to assume, or at least one elegant way, thinking about the powers assigned to the B'nai Ha'ir in the first part of Bava Basra, is that it's a subset of the powers that the halakha assigns to the melech. Yes? Which are distinct from the typical halakhic questions that get raised elsewhere in Shas. Yes? Now, I'm just going to say a little more. Earlier in the year, I just want to tie this into a theme, we broached this question about what's the relationship between halacha and pshara and the telos, or the end of shalom in society. We also raised the question of what's the relationship between din and lefnim yishuras ha-din. And I made the point that the system of halacha is very richly populated by a wide variety of dinim. They're not just all the same din Torah. Pshara seems to be a different type of set of halachos, and lefnim yishuras ha-din speaks to a different type of halachos. And I just want to say that this political power of the melech and the B'nai Ha'ir also speaks to a different type of halachic interest. Right, which might be different from what you'd say is classic din Torah type of dinim that the Ran would subsume under the discussion of shoftim, you know, ribis and gneva and zikin. We'll look at the Ran. The Ran himself seems to think that these two different halachic interests call for different. They have to be divided into different powers because sometimes they're at odds with each other. So the Ran gives a very famous example. Anybody know this? The Ran, yeah, Ned?
Basic level of the infrastructure aren't sufficient to regulate society, so the melech compensates.
Yeah, very good. So this is the Drashas Ran. We'll come back to this when you all have a chance to read it inside. But I want to just motivate the type of dinim that we're looking at. So here's the Ran on page 18 now. Drasha Yud Aleph, Shoftim V'Shotrim Titei Lecha. So you guys should be familiar with this. The Ran says,
would you be able to make that text a little
bit? Sure. Here you go. How's that? I couldn't even read it myself when it was that small. So the Ran here suggests that he has this very fascinating distinction between what he calls mitzvos v'chukim, which have no political goal at all. Ein inyanam tikun medini klal. He says these are all just to help us achieve dveikos in the Shechina. Very radical view about what most of the dinim of Nezikin are. Although maybe Bilam and the Yadarma and the Rashba who cite Hezek Riyah as being about the Ruim Halal Shetisha Lem Shechina might like this or might not like this. But he contrasts that with the importance of also creating a good society, right? And he gives an example. He says, from the perspective of pure Din Torah, so you can't punish somebody unless you have Edim and Hasra. Anybody know this example? Yeah, and he says that's for sure true. He says over here, Hashoftim v'hasanhedrin, haya tachlisam lishbot ha'am b'mishpat amiti tzodek ba'atzmo. Like true justice. It's a very nice phrase. So when you get to the run inside, think about what this category means. So he says, under Shoftim, he says, mishpat amiti tzodek ba'atzmo. Remember when we were learning the sugya Magid Hanikah, we saw these distinctions between, you know, what would the true halakhic principle be, but then sometimes, like the Yadamah said, you have to deter the Yoreid from acting in this way. So there's a difference in these external considerations and what true justice requires. So the Ran says that the Shoftim, their job is to look at things from this perspective of true justice, like in what's intrinsically just. Okay, and then he says, the melech has a different power. Let's see. Kol ma'ashe yechzar mehatikon hanizkar haya mashlimo hamelech. And whatever these were not able to achieve for social organization overall, the melech would step in and create rules that would create a good society. Because the Mishpat Amiti Tzodek Ba'atzmo doesn't always create a good society. So let's see his example. Here. Bizman Shehayu B'Yisrael Sanhedrin U'Melech. When you have both a Sanhedrin and a Melech, right, two separate powers. Hasanhedrin heim lishbot esa'am b'mishpat tzedek levad, lo litikun inyanam b'yoser mizah. The Shoftim aren't supposed to be doing things that a general political society is trying to do. So, you know, make sure there's not too much theft on the streets. Make sure you have a safe speed limit. Make sure you're safe from enemies. That's not the job of the Shoftim. Unless the melech designates it to them. And then he goes on to say, let's see. He says, Tikunam biyoser mizan nimsar lamelech, lo lishofe. So again, Tikunam Medina is a power that's given to the melech. Let me just find his example. Here we go. Okay. So he says, why do we need both of these separate powers? And he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Mem that in order to kill a murderer or to punish a thief, you need Edim and Hasra. Okay? He says, Hisreisim bo, kibel Hasra, hitir atzma lemisa, hemis besoch kadei dibur. So if you study these sugyas in Sanhedrin, it's very clear that it's very difficult to actually punish a criminal. Why? Because you need two Edim to have given him Hasra. He had to have accepted the Hasra upon himself. He had to have committed the act within a certain amount of time of receiving the Hasra, which makes it excessively difficult to actually punish somebody, certainly with Mises Bezdin, but also with Malkus, because a lot of Rishonim think you need these things for Malkus also. And he says, look at this. The Ein Safek, ki chol ze roi mitzad mishpat tzedek, ki lama yumas ish, im loshen yodeya, what's he saying in that phrase? Josh?
He's saying you can only have the right to kill someone if he accepts that you will die.
Yeah. Very fascinating view. He seems to think that from the perspective of Mishpat Amiti Tzodek Ba'atzmo, it would always be wrong to kill somebody unless he knew that he was subjecting himself to a punishment of death. Like he has to be matir atzma lemisa in some way. It's a very interesting theory about when it's permissible to kill somebody from the perspective of true justice. Ulezei yitzarech sheyikabel av hasra b'chol yasar advar mashnuim b'osa b'raisa. V'zeh mishpat tzedek amitzi ba'atzmo hanimsar ledayanim. That's the hat that the dayanim are supposed to wear when they adjudicate what's intrinsically just and true on its own. Everybody see that? Questions on that before we move on?
It sounds like they're on it. There's no king, though, then the judge is
You saw the dresses around already?
No.
Hold up on what happens when there's no king. What happens when these two powers combine in a single body? But we don't have to worry about it. Right now we're just articulating the different interests that the halakha has, right? And but then he says, aval im lo yenash over ki imal ze haderech. Yifsad hasidur hamedini legamri. She yisrabu shofchei damim, v'lo yaguru min ha'onesh. What's that concern?
Anarchy.
What? Yeah, anarchy. If every criminal knows that he could get away with murder without accepting hasra, he just says, oh, I didn't know that I was mechayev misa, right? Then you're going to lose social order altogether. Because there's nothing deterring people from committing these crimes. There's no fear of punishment. So for that reason, he says, there's a special power that Hashem gives to the Melech. V'lechein tziva Hashem yisbarach litzorech yishuvo shel olam b'minoy ha-melech. And he cites the Som Tassim Alech ha-melech. V'ha-melech yachol ladun shelo b'hasra. Kifi Masha Yira Shehut Sarich Likibutz Hamedini. So what does that mean? Daniel?
He's able to rule with that warning just in order to keep order in the state.
Exactly. Yeah. So at times these two perspectives are at odds with each other, right? The perspective of the Melech is for kibbutz hamidini, literally political organization, what's good for society, which contrasts with this mishpat amiti tzodek ba'atzmo. I think it's a very elegant distinction that the Ran develops here, and he says these are two different powers that the halakha assigns, one to the melech and one to the shoftim. Shmuel, you have a hand on this?
I mean, this is very elegant, and this is a totally separate discussion, but doesn't this rip apart the entire system of justice that we have, and the whole idea of Hasra and that's a big deal?
Why is it? So meaning it rips apart Mishpat Amiti Tzodek Ba'atzmo?
No, just the idea.
The Melech has the power.
And Hasra, and that's pretty fundamental.
Fundamental from what perspective?
Judaism.
No. So it's not fundamental from the perspective of Judaism, it's fundamental from the perspective of Mishpat Amiti.
Okay.
But the Ran saying it's not fundamental from the perspective of a different halachic interest, Kibbutz Medini.
Okay.
See that?
I guess this is just
big. What?
This is just a really big chiddush.
It's a big chiddush to you? Why is it a big chiddush to you? Because you don't think that there are two separate powers.
At least in my education up until this point, it's not been presented that there were two separate powers, no.
It's a lawsuit in the making right here. TABC, file suit against them. Well, I think that's why the Ran is so insightful, because the Ran is saying these are two interests. Now you'll say, well, where do we find this power in the Gemara? Right? Would you say that?
What?
So the Chumash, so he's saying that's implicit in Som Tassim Alech HaMelech. I mean, in the Mishpat HaMelech in Parsha Shmuel. What?
Yeah.
You say in Navi, it's very clear that the Melech had all these. And in fact, I think it's going to be an interesting question that we want to tease out when we get deeper into this. Where do you find these types of political considerations as halachic interests in the Gemara? Or in the Navi? So Melech is one natural place where the Ran goes. The Ran actually cites a different Gemara. Anybody know which Gemara? Bezdin Makin Gonshin Shalom Min Adin. He says that really comes from the Melech's authority, but as Eitan pointed out, when there's no Melech, the Bezdin has to wear two hats. as the people tasked with Mishpat Amiti, but also as tasked with Kibbutz Medini. But when they're Makan Ve'onshin Shalom and Adin, they're doing it when by drawing on the power as the political sovereigns of a Jewish community. So this is a Gemara of Pesachim Gemara in Sanhedrin and in Yevamos of Makan Ve'onshin Shalom and Adin. And Shalom and Adin tips you off that it's not from the perspective of Din, right? And that's why I think it ties in with Shara versus Din, with Nimi Shura Sadin versus Din. So you actually should be sensitive to the fact that, yes, not everything in the Gemara and the Halakos here are addressed in the perspective of Din. That's why I think it fits in nicely with that other inquiry we had. Now let me say just one more thing, and then I'll take Ned's hand. So I'm going to say, I'm going to hit that both of these are, of course, halachic interests. So that applies to both of these, yes? But I'm going to add another Gemara to this political consideration. What Gemara? Yeah, our Gemara. Right? I think that's exactly right. Not just so our Mishnah for sure, but Kofin says that for Beishar. Beishar and Choma, etc. And then we saw the Tosefta and the Rishonim expand this to Kol Tzarchei Ha'ir. And then the Gemara we're going to see on Daf Ches, Rashon Ben Ha'ir La'Asiya Kitzasan. So my point is that this Gemara itself is an expression of that general political power that the Halakha assigns to communities or the unit of a city, which is for the Kibbutz Medini. We'll see that explicitly in these Chuvas that are shown up. Which one? Okay. We'll just find a lawyer and we'll class action it. Just kidding. I do think this is very much a neglected aspect of the first bracket of Basra in general and the, one of the important aspects of Halakha. Yeah. Ed?
I mentioned this in passing yesterday to you after Dr. Sharon, but just introduce Torah Tzion.
Torah Tzion?
Yeah.
Is that one of the five Torahs?
It's the way sort of the religious Zionists, halakhists, dealt with the question of how to deal with democracy, they basically said that the people, they don't assign the status of Melech Shoftim, they assign the status of Melech to the populace.
Yeah, well, that might be so.
Yeah.
B'nai Ha'ir, Rashon B'nai Ha'ir. So the question is, that's what we're going to discuss today. The B'nai Ha'ir, the Tuvei Ha'ir, Harnase Ha'ir, the Roshe Ha'ir. These are all terms that come up in the Chuvos of the Rishonim, who are themselves grounding their discussion about Basra Daf Zayin, right? And yeah, so I think they're grounding this koach in the people themselves, right? So what do you want to say with that, Ned?
I'm saying it's clearly historically that's how it was viewed.
As imminent in the people, you're saying. Yeah, so I think it's a very interesting question. You know, why are these powers accorded to the melech per se? Or the Melech himself is just viewed as one instantiation of the Roshe Ha'ir.
Now, the difference is that the Melech is not appointed by them. I guess
tricky question.
Does it require consent of people or not? But, yeah.
Well, consent is not the only way to be the representative of, right? Yes? I mean, I don't know. Even in America, right, you could only have the consent of the minority of the country and still be the sovereign.
Yeah, we're all voted into the system.
Well,
we're all ostensibly voted into that system, such that we're
that's a very controversial view. Most people would say you're never voted to the system, right? No one asked you if you like the system, and if you said you don't like the system, tough luck, right? No? So I'm just saying you shouldn't think that the only way to view the Melech's power as drawing from the Am is through some consent theory. But we should keep our eyes open for that. Yes? Good. Other hands? Ariel?
How does Hefker fit in Hefker's mind?
Hefker Bez and Hefker might fit nicely in this discussion. So we'll come back to that. Yeah. So you might want to put in hefker bezel, hefker down here. In fact, there's a phrase that we saw today that we're going to see in a few moments in one of the Rishonim, who says that the roshei ha'ir are considered the bezdin for the ear. And then when we get to daf ches, we'll see that hefker bezel, hefker looms large in how some Rishonim think of the koach b'nei ha'ir. Yeah, in the sugya of Rashon b'nei ha'ir lasiya al kitzasan. So yes, I think hefker bezdin hefker. And I think we saw some of this last year, right? Hefker bezdin hefker. If you think this applies to the Roshei Ha'ir, is another important type of political consideration, arguably. Romy and then Josh.
Yeah, two things. First of all, you just expanded this thing of this category of the Ran by like a lot.
Which way?
What?
Which way did I expand it, and which way by a...
The category of melech, meaning that it might be that there's a category of a kind of person who needs to keep order while killing each other, and that doesn't yet mean that they can control every single price in every single market, or every aspect of the market, or that they can tell every individual exactly what they need to pay for down to, a sacred Torah and a Tanakh, whatever.
Yeah.
That's one.
So you're saying the Ran, so at the Ran, where does the buck stop for the Ran himself?
It might just be like, you have the right to make sure that they're killing each other. Doesn't mean that everyone needs to have, protection from, the potential.
Well, let's look at his phrase. So first he says, here. Hamelech yochal ladun shelo ba'asra kefim ha'sheyire shehu tzarech lekibot ha'medini. That's a very broad phrase, right? In accordance with what he sees is necessary for society. That's probably one. So I take that as one illustration of how political order would be destroyed, right? So, but there are other ways. Right, looting could be another. People just like doing crazy things in the streets. And in fact, I think the Ran himself cites. Let's find this. Yeah, we're gonna look at this more closely, so we don't have to adjudicate this right now. But he does say, "Al tiksha shemati shebezdin makin vonchin shalom min haTorah." Right, laso siyag haTorah. And he says, oh, doesn't that show that Bezdin has this authority? And he says, no, that's only when there's no melech. Right? But bizman that there's a melech, and he says, shenira shemimenu sheminoi ha-Bezdin hu lishbot kifi tikun ha-eis va-azman. So the question is, what do you think is subsumed under Bezdin, Makin, Bo'ch, and Shalom, and Adin? If that's more than just killing people, or shofchei damim, the Ran himself says this is fundamentally a power that's given to the melech. Right, and it's only when there's no melech that power goes to Bezdin, right?
And then how does it balance with? I mean, why doesn't this whole power of the melech make the mishpat amiti like obsolete?
Why doesn't it make it obsolete? Why would it make it obsolete?
Well, it doesn't matter. Meaning, in the sense that is the thing restricted in any way at all?
Yeah,
is anything unjust? Or does it matter if it's unjust?
Yeah, what are the restrictions on the melech?
And B...
So you know, the Ran says that's why the melech has to have a sefer Torah with him, to always remind him that he's not above the law. But yeah, what are the actual limits of the power?
So that's in one sense, which it could be totally destroyed, but even in the sense that the actual courts or whatever, Beis Din or something, whatever, themselves, then it basically doesn't matter what they... Meaning, where is their power?
The Bezdin's power against the Melech?
Yeah. Not against the Melech, just in general. Like, we don't really care what you have to say, as long as, right, because that can all be overridden by a general...
Anybody want to respond to Romy's?
Unless you say they're there to solve the, everyday disputes that the king doesn't care.
Yeah, or unless there's an overriding political concern, then you stick with Mishpat Amiti at Tzodek Ba'atzmo.
But on your expansion, that's really not the case. It's not a question of what is just for a person to... have to pay for, or what is just, unless you consider all these things to be very clearly overriding political concerns.
It might be. I mean, so The question is, you know, maybe it might depend on what area of halacha. So in Dine Mominis, you know, you saw Minog itself has very strong power. Takana is going to have very strong power. So if Rashaim B'nei Ha'ir could override some of these things, I wouldn't be so surprised, right? In other areas, like in the Ran's example, where it's about killing people, it's a more extreme question. So I don't know exactly where the line is. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a separation of halachic interests. And somehow they're supposed to work in tandem.
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess my question is not whether or not they're two interests. The question is whether or not the second, or whatever the first interest, the mishpat interest, ends up
getting destroyed. I would think not. I don't see why it has to be destroyed just because there's... Right, so it's like, you know, in America, you have the courts versus the executive branch.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The courts... limiting the power of the executive branch and the legislative branch.
Depends who you ask. Yeah, it depends who you ask, though, right? How much and...
No, I'm saying, well, you're saying because in theory they might not be, like...
Yeah, it's not obvious which, you know, which you know, how one could limit the other, and I'm sure yeah, the Shoftim could limit the Mishpat HaMelech in the
saying,
same
right,
way.
So I get that as my question. Like, can the Shoftim say, what well, you're doing is unconstitutional, and then, you know...
And you get a constitutional crisis. That's what happens if they don't agree on these things. But I don't know if there's ever a neat answer to that, right? Who gets to decide when?
Well, in America, here there is relatively
much. No, it's not so clear.
Maybe the shofet comes and he tells the king like a story about sheep, and like things work themselves out.
Or you get fights between the different branches.
I'm just saying, meaning in America, if there's a law and it's unconstitutional, they say it's unconstitutional. If you want to have a law, you need to have, you know, amend the constitution.
And let's say the executive doesn't listen, right? And,
what do you mean?
Well, it's complicated. In America, it's not clear what, let's say, the courts decided that they have that power.
Right. That's a little bit of a bootstrapping.
Well, yeah, it's like Marbury versus Madison. Like the courts decided that they have this power. It's not so obvious that they do. You know, in Israel, for example, members of the Knesset don't think that the Beit HaMishpat HaElyon has power over Knesset legislation. So, you know, these, in any system, those are a complicated question, and I guess the courts in America decide that they have the power. I guess, is that a devar muskam, or, like, what happens if the executive decides?
Well, like, the past, like, 200 years it has been.
What?
Like, the past 200 years it's been an accepted principle. Like, we've seen time and again things like us striking out stuff constitutional.
Yeah, but then the question is, what happens when you have somebody who doesn't obey those norms? Right, so the system only works insofar as those norms are observed. Right. Let's say the executive said, "I don't care what the courts say."
Like the guy that marched on the Native Americans when the courts said,
"Yeah,
right? Yeah, okay."
Yeah. Right.
And the people.
It happens. All right. So that's the bit of a background discussion of where I think the Kofin B'nei Ha'ir and our discussion on Daf Zayin is really anchored in this fundamental discussion of Mishpat HaMelech or more generally put upon social concerns of halacha. Let me just say a little more about this, if that's okay. I added to the beginning of the source sheet here in Kofinos Olivnos Beishar Videles the Ramban on Vasisa Yashar Vatov. You guys remember this Ramban? I don't think we discussed it in this context, did we? No. So the Ramban on Vasisa Yashar Vatov, which we saw in the Pshara discussion and the Dine Bar Mitzvah discussion, just want to draw your attention back to that formulation. He says, Vasisa Yashar Vatov is an Inyan Gadol. Why? Anybody volunteer to read this? Josh, go for it.
Ze Inyan Gadol, Fishi Yashar Vaskir Vitara Kolam, and the Haggad Hadam, Yushkana Bereav, Vichol Masim Atano, Vatikuna Yushav Midan Kulam. But the Torah can't be an infinite amount of rules that can cover every single possibility.
Exactly. And notice specifically what does he include in there? Yeah. Vehamedinos. Right? So you might say that if you're looking for the Doraisa source and you don't want to go to Mishpat HaMelech directly, you can say, oh, this the Ramban himself reads into the Sisa Yashvatov a mandate as a general concern for Tikkuni Ayisha Vehamedinos Kulam. You see that? So it's and also those Hoshkenim type things. Call Han Hagos Adam Shteya Vereya. Right, a person's conduct with his neighbors and his friends. So I thought that could also be another source where the Torah is mandating this type of either sovereignty or rules for Tikkuni Yishuv HaMedinos Kulam under a Tzitzei Yashivat Tov, even though it's not clear to whom these powers are allocated in this context. Josh, you had a follow-up on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say it seemed like it's allocating it to the individual. Like each person is responsible on his own to the Tzitzei Yashivat Tov.
Maybe, but
what happens when you have a collection of people who are independently sovereign? Right? That's the... So when you aggregate the individual sovereigns, you get maybe some room, some theory of room. Right?
Okay. That's it for the background. So let's jump into what we wanted to look at today.
On this point. Like,
sure.
Like the Magen Mishnah, which is right there.
Let's go back to the Magen Mishnah.
That this power is given to Chazal, and when they're implementing certain takanos or certain things, some of those are because of Asisei Yashivat Tov to improve society.
So this is like the Rav Shimon Shkap about some dinim in the Gemara being Shara. Maybe according to the Magen Mishnah, some things that are din gamur are really grounded in this concern for tikkun hamdina. Yes? So maybe like a hilchos shchinim type discussion sometimes might be really grounded not in the conception of sodek amiti davarat sodek ba'atzmo, like hatavas hachatzer, is that about intrinsic justice and true, or no, just like latavas hamedina and like latavas the relationships between shchinim, tikkun hamedini. All right, is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very nice way of thinking about it. Everybody likes Zacharia's point? I do. Anybody opposed to Zacharia's point? All right. Great. Okay, so that's for the first major issue, just to explicate a little more what I meant by the importance of the sugya of Koach B'nei Yair being about this sovereign political authority of these units of social organization and all. Then also we discussed in the last year what exactly constitutes tzarchei ha'ir, right? So what are these tzarchim? Is it just utilities, beis hakneses? What about for people who don't benefit from those tzarchim? So what are considered the tzarchei ha'ir? That's the question we discussed a little bit in the last year. And it's an interesting question we should keep in the back of our minds. Do the powers, this political power of the B'nai Ha'ir, does it ever extend beyond the monetary tzrachim of the town? Right? Could it ever go beyond that? What do you guys think offhand?
Like stopping murder, you mean?
Well, stopping murder, I guess, is an example where it goes beyond mominus, right? That's obvious and that's clear in the Ran. So that would be a good example. But what about even... Yeah, Daniel? Yeah, I would think so, offhand.
We saw the Minyan example.
Yeah, the Minyan example is a great example, right? That seems to be a power that extends beyond just pure mominous. Shmuel?
Also all the jobs that we were allowed to tell them not to take.
Yeah, right, that you could force people not to enter certain professions, right? Maybe that's an interesting question whether that's still within Mammon or beyond Mammon. But what we're going to see a little later on is what about for certain... Yeridea type questions, like Isser questions. So do the B'nai Ha'ir have a power to say that, we just adopt this din or this shita on Isurim questions? So what we saw, Zacharia and I saw last year, is like some towns that said, oh, like, we paskin like the Rambam on all issues.
Yemen.
Yeah, not necessarily. I don't think his tshuva of the Ran was from Yemen, but I guess there are other towns in Spain that said everything we do is according to the Rambam, right? I guess maybe Chedis or something. But only Zachary laughed. All right, close to home. So we want to keep our minds open to see, does this power of the B'nai Ha'ir extend beyond the narrow realm of Mominus? Okay, and the third thing that we discussed in the last year, and this is what we're going to look into more deeply now, is this question of, well, who gets to make the decisions, for the B'nai HaYir. Right, so granted, Kofin says that Livnos Beishar, etc., but the Mishnah doesn't explicate who has that power. At least that's not explicit or addressed explicitly by the Mishnah or Gemara. Okay? Now, what we already saw is that within that question, there's a division between different types of Tzrachim. So the Shulchan Aruch and Mari Bruna and Meiri pointed out that at least for some Tzrachim, even the Miut has the power to be Kofa the Rabim. But for other Tzrachim, it wasn't as obvious, certainly not from the Gemara, and they suggested that maybe Rov gets to decide right, which Tzrachim are necessary for the year. So let's dive into this question about who gets to decide. And today specifically, I'm interested in, is it the people themselves, the Rov Ha'ir? Is it Kol Ha'ir? Is it the entire city, like some conception of unanimity? And how does that relate to the Mimunim Al Ha'ir, the people who are charged with leading the city? Okay? So today we're going to focus on the decision-making capacity. But of course, the question about who gets to make the decision seems to relate to the more fundamental question about in whom this power resides, right? Okay. So let me get the example from the United States. We might say that Congress or the executive branch gets to make decisions for the country as a whole, but on any standard interpretation of our system of government, the political sovereignty resides in the people. And Congress and executive are considered shluchim, right, the agents of the people, right? So who gets to make the decisions is a different question from in whom the original political jurisdiction resides. Yeah? Sound familiar? Poli-sci majors. So Eitan, does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah? Different view on things you want to share? It's good? All right, Romy, sounds good? Okay. Let's start then today with... So we read the Chuvus Maram last time. So let's start with this discussion of the Tuvei Yir, the Gemara Megillah Chaf Hei Amud Beis.
That was the longest Hakdama we ever had, right?
Trying for that to not happen again. The Gemara in Megillah and Chaf Vav Amud Beis, the Mishnah there... The Mishnah Chaf Hei Amud Beis talks about the B'nai Ha'ir, so again we get that phrase, who sell their Beis HaKnesses, they sell some of the important ritual or holy objects of the town. And it talks about how the money that's received in exchange for those Beis HaKnesses, etc., gets the Kedusha status of the thing that it's replacing. But the Gemara says that that's only true if this was done by Yechidim, but if the sale was done by the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir B'mamad Anshei Ha'ir, then the thing totally could be zapped of its Kedusha, it can lose its Kedusha, and the money you receive in exchange could be used for anything, right? Even to buy beer. That's the Gemara's example. So you see that there's this special power accorded to the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. We don't yet know who they are. But what else is significant about this Mishnah? It's not just that the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir have this power. Josh?
That is the Ma'amad Asher.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the seven leaders of the town in some public assembly with the constituents of the town. So if it's sold in that way, then that's like... you know, you have full authority, and the thing that you're selling is fully sold, and it could lose its status of kedusha altogether. Ned, do you have a question on this?
It's almost like Zechariah Shabbat, the Kaisara.
Yeah, but you need the permission. It's something that affects the entire town. You need the whole town on board. The Mars Machpelah, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's an interesting question: what can the leader do without the presence of the people? So in Chayesar, it's very clear that all B'nai Ches, are there present for the sale. Yeah. Kol Ba'ei Shar Yiro, I think that's what's going on there. Yeah, very great great example on that. Hey, Don?
What's the like connection between having having the entire city there and like changing
the Kedusha? Yeah.
Of the object? That's like confusing.
Yeah, it's a good question. Now, of course, that Kedusha, what does it have to do with the Mamad Rova year?
Right.
That's a good Kedusha question. I actually don't want to get into that right now, because it's going to pull us into Kedusha questions. But for now, we're just going to treat it as a question of who do they have full authority. So,
but it seems like they do mean, like, you could go, as long as you're going up in Kedusha, or can you stay constant in Kedusha? Like, can you buy a different of the same thing?
Yeah, so... That's the sense you get from this Gemara Megillah, but yeah, I don't want to get pulled into the Kedusha question.
No, but I'm just saying, like, meaning, like, they do, the Shema Tuvei here do have full autonomy, as long as you don't consider the Kedusha thing, they have full autonomy regardless of the assembly being or not being there. It's just the Kedusha thing that they don't have full autonomy.
It's actually, so the sense that I get from the Gemara is that the reason why, like, there's something, they can maybe manage certain things on their own. Hold off on that comment altogether, actually. Hold off. We can come back to it separately, because I don't want to get pulled into that discussion right now. Okay. So we see there's this concept of Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir, and sometimes it has to be Mamad Anshei Ha'ir. Okay. Who are the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir? So Rashi says they're the Tovim. That's why they're Tuvei Ha'ir. So I guess it's the best members of town. Kobe, you don't like that?
We're going to see, like, and later on, the shoots we talk what's it mean to the Tuvei Ha'ir.
Yeah, what does that mean? Right. But I guess Tuvei Ha'ir, that connotes that they're the, you know, the best, like Tov, no? Isn't that what the word means?
What is, like, good people in the city?
Tuvei Ha'ir. I would say it's the... Right, the best in what? Right, not necessarily knowledge or smarts, but... Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. So the and then you have Yushalmi here. So the Balbi introduces the idea of Tuvei Ha'ir. Yushalmi then is, I think, even more informative, and that's why all the Rishonim end up quoting this Yushalmi. So the question is, what's the significance of these Tuvei Ha'ir? And the Yushalmi commenting on this says, so who's our Yushalmi expert here? Let's see. Daniel, you want to be our Yushalmi expert for the day?
Give it a shot.
Give it a shot.
Yemon basic Knesset to basic Knesset. So when three people appoint Gavarim to basic Knesset.
No, three people, me basic Knesset.
Three people from the basic Knesset.
Yeah, so three representatives of the basic Knesset are?
Anointing.
Exactly. So this is a theory of representation, right? You get three people from the shul, they speak with the power of the shul. And Zion. Yeah. Exactly. So this is a theory of representation, right? Three members of the shul speak with the power of the entire shul. Three members of the city speak with the power of the entire city. If we're looking at the halakhah's theory of the powers of representation, this Yushalmi is probably the best place to go. You can see here the Karban Eda writes explicitly. How does he understand this?
Right, so he says, you know, you can use Kibul Otan, Anshe Basic Knesset, Lugavan, Lugavan, Tina, Kibul, Sikim, Lugavan, right? So three people that Anshe Basic Knesset become Lugavan.
So three people, translate that again, three people.
Three people. Shikibul Otan, Anshe Basic Knesset.
Lugavan.
Lugavan.
What does that mean?
Where the people of the eight Knesset accepted them.
Exactly. So these three people who were appointed by the community as their representatives. Gabbai doesn't mean the guy who calls out the Elios, but in this context it means the partners, or the people who are in charge of the leaders of the community. So let's say today, who would that be? What would be the equivalent?
President?
Yeah, the shul board, or the executive board, maybe the president of the shul, right? Dinan. Oh. So when you have the representatives who are appointed by the community making decisions, it's as if the entire community is making that decision along with them. So the representatives could bind and speak for the entire constituency. Same for the Shiva Mibnei Ayir, so Zildi, take it away. Yeah. So they have the status, the seven people who are appointed by the community, they speak with the authority of the entire community. So the halacha here has a very clear, if you take this Yushalmi this way, it has a very clear sense of representative government. Okay? Yushalmi then clarifies. Yushalmi says, what's the big deal of seven or three? What's the magic of those numbers? So what does Yushalmi say? Ma'anan.
Ma'anan.
Right, so what's the objection there?
Let's say they only accepted one person.
Yeah, let's say you just anoint the president. There's no board, right? So you say the president is the representative of the community. So what happens then?
So then, right, do we say that they want to make a sale or something?
Is that valid?
Is that valid?
Is it? So what does Yushalmi say? Im b'shekibu alein afilu echad. Meaning what?
That sounds like it would be.
Yeah. Even if it's one, if the community accepts one person as their representative, that's binding. Because there's no magic to the three versus seven. And if they didn't accept them, so even if you have a lot of people, that's not binding, right? So three people get up and declare themselves the representative, that's meaningless, right? So, Ella, Cain, Anan, Cain,
Anan, Chaimin, and Bistam. So this is, so what we just said is this is Stam, they were not.
So what does Stam mean? So look at the Carbonata. How does he explain it? Yes, so once you appoint seven people generally as the leaders, even if you didn't designate the scope of their powers, they have, they're presumed to have full authority to do anything. Whereas, if you appointed less than seven or less than three in the Beis HaKnesses case, you might say, Lo Allah al das b'nei ha'ir me'olam she'yimkuru. So the question is, yes, when it's one person and he's explicitly authorized with these powers, then that's sufficient. And if the community delegates those powers, then. If it's many people and they weren't designated any powers, then their authority is meaningless. The significance of seven for a community of three for Beis HaKnesses is when they're given power stam, they're anointed or they're appointed without anybody designating the scope of those powers. If it's three for Beis HaKnesses, they're seven for a shul, then they have full authority over all issues. Yeah? Does that make sense to you guys? Okay, that's the analysis of Yushalmi. Okay. Now, we saw last year the Mordechai citing the Ravya, who gave us a little more insight into the powers that these Tuvei Ha'ir have. And what does he say based off, he cites this Yushalmi, and what does he say about the powers of the Shul board? Somebody want to read this Mordechai for us? Benji?
Yeah. Even in the borough of Tuvei Ha'ir, the Tchilam and the Hanig Kaleha, the Chodavar.
Or Kehilam, or the community, Kihilam, their community.
Right. Afili Yachid should.
Biruru.
I'm sorry, I can't, I'm like having trouble saying that. In the borough of Tuvei Ha'ir, the Tchilam, the Hanig Kaleha, the Chodavar.
Yeah, so what does he say? So let's say a community designates one person as their leader.
Then
so
he can do whatever, like, everything's within his scope.
For the Takana Sakaho.
Right.
Right.
For general.
And he has the power of Yiftach Bedoro Kishmuel Bedoro. How do you, so what's that, analogy of Yiftach Bedoro Kishmuel Bedoro?
So I didn't exactly, wasn't Yiftach just like some guy that like killed his daughter? was he a Melech?
He's Shofei.
Shofei.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He also did. I don't know if he killed his daughter, but he definitely got her killed.
What?
Yeah.
Didn't he actually sacrifice his daughter?
Yeah, well, we don't have to take a stand on that here.
Oh, okay.
He definitely got his daughter killed. So what? So what's the point here? So the point is, if you
then he has the status of a shofei.
So yeah. So if these two veil year were appointed, even if it's one person, he has full powers within what? What does he say? Lahanhig. He says lahanhig kihihal. Kehilam b'chol davar, then whatever he does is valid b'takanas hakal. So let's say, like modern day analogy, let's say a community appoints a president to be in charge of the entire town. So he gets to make the COVID rules for the shul, maybe?
Yeah.
Things like for the takanas hakal. Yeah, and he has the power over these takanos, like Yiftach Bedoro and Kishmuel Bedoro. So he has full halachic authority. For, I would say, within this, the political, the Takanas HaKol jurisdiction.
Right.
Do you disagree, Ned?
Shoftim.
What?
That's interesting, because they're both Shoftim.
Yeah, so I think he's just using the Shoftim analogy for Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro, to say that we don't really care about how big of a guy he is. I mean, the point is that even if he's a loser from the community, if they made him the shul president, then he speaks with the authority of the kol. I think that's what the Yiftach Bedoro Kishmul Bedoro is doing.
Is that kind of like the Tobey Ayir aspect? Like the Tobey aspect?
Yeah.
The Tobey Ayir aspect being the best guy?
Exactly. Yeah, or even if objectively he's not really a great guy, it's the fact that he's appointed by the kol that gives him his power. So it's not... So let me just say that a little more precisely and clearly. What I think is significant about this Rabia and the citing of Yiftach Bedoro Kishmuel Bedoro is exactly that the authority here doesn't derive from the knowledge, expertise, wisdom, virtue, etc. of the leader. The whole point is that the power derives exclusively from the fact that they were appointed mitchila lahanhe kihilam. And that's where, so it's, in that sense, it's a purely political power. And his power is that he represents the will of the people. And that's why it doesn't matter what his actual personality is, if that's Bedoro or Shmuel Bedoro, in virtue of the fact that he is Mimuna Alat Zibor. Yes? Are we?
It seems like exactly parallel. It's like another majoritarian kind of thing. It's like very similar to, you know, that same idea that we were talking about before, that the fact of the majority is what grants is creating the authority in all of these cases.
Yeah. So that's another reason to explain it as a social or political leadership, right? Because you are authorized by the constituents.
Yeah, obviously the question, on all of those things is, you know, when the majority makes bad decisions.
Yeah.
Or really bad decisions.
Right. But let's first tease out the underlying principles, then we can figure out what happens when they get difficult, right? Okay, so where does this Yiftach Bedoro Shmuel Bedoro paradigm come from? Anybody know? Mar Rosh Hashanah Chaf Hei Amid Aleph. So what's the context here? Let me just make it smaller again. This is the dispute about Kiddush HaChodesh, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, the dispute between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Well, Rabbi Gamliel, correct. So Eitan, tell us about it. What happened between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel? Yeah. And then the Mishnah itself, just make sure that's right. And then the Mishnah itself says the following. Im bayin anu ladon achar bezdin asher begamliel, tzrichin anu ladon achar kol bezdin ubezdin shamad mimos Moshe bar achshav. Right, so if you, Rabbi Yeshua, disagree with Rabbi Gamliel's bezdin's decision, then we should be suspect about any, we could always challenge any bezdin's decision. It's like a kum dina principle. Right? What? Yeah, kam dinar zelusa de bedina type thing, and then the Gemara cites this thing. Vayal Moshe v'Aaron nadav aviu v'shivim zikne Yisrael. Lama lo nisparshu shemosam shel zakenim. So why does the Torah not explicate the names of all the other zakenim? Elalamei shekol shlosha b'shlosha sham d'bezna Yisrael reyu kebez dino shlosha. Right, whoever is appointed to be these leaders of the Bezdin, they have the same authority as Bezdino Shel Moshe. Okay? And the Gemara says, commenting on this, it quotes from Shmuel Aleph. You know, the Pasuk in Shmuel Yudbeis Vav says, V'yomar Shmuel Am, Asher Asa Es Moshe Ves Aaron. Hashem Asher Asa Es Moshe Ves Aaron. So Shmuel points to the leadership of Moshe of Aaron. A few psukim later, he appeals to the shoftim of Yerubal and Bidan and Yiftach, and he mentions himself, Shmuel. So the Gemara darshins, the Gemara explains that there's an analogy. Shakal hakasav shlosha kali olam kishlosha chamure olam. Right, these three inferior shoftim are like the three greatest shoftim. Lomar lecha Yerubal bedoro, Moshe bedoro, Bidan bedoro, Ka'aron bedoro, Yiftach bedoro, Kishmuel bedoro. Lelamdecha, so here's the key phrase from the Gemara, Shafilu kal shebekalin v'nismane parnas al atzibur harehu ke'avir shebeavirim. So what does that phrase mean? Daniel?
Even with the weakest of the weak, if they're appointed on the Tzibor, they're like the strongest of the strong.
Yeah, so notice, Nismane Parnas al Tzibor, right? What gives them their authority is the fact that they were appointed over the Tzibor. And so once they have that Nisparnas al Tzibor, then even the Kal Shebekalim is Kavir Shebavirim. So what matters for these questions of authority seems to be the fact of being Nismane Parnas al Tzibor. Okay? Ready with me on that? And that's what the Ravya is appealing to when he says, oh, if this Parnas was Mimuna al Yidei Ha'am, then it doesn't matter what his knowledge is, etc., etc. It's the fact of his appointment that gives him his power over the call. Yes? Okay. Good. So now let's, with that in mind, let's turn to the Tshuvos of the Rishonim, who explicate this notion of the Tuvei Ha'ir. So our first tshuva is the tshuva of Rashba and Chelek Aleph, Taf Resh Yud Zayin. The shaila here is a very complicated shaila. The details don't really matter for us, but it seems like somebody made a donation to the Kahal, and then the Tuvei Ha'ir messed with the donation. They changed it, diverted it to a different purpose. This is every donor's concern. You cut out a gift in your market for something, and then the institution ends up using it for something else. Right? Yes? That should be your concern when you make gifts to institutions. So look what the question is, did the Tuvei Ha'ir, in this case, the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir, have the right to divert this gift that was made to the Kahal? And what does the Rashba respond? He says, first of all, the Bnei Ha'ir, Vishiva Tuvei Ha'ir, could divert whatever gifts they want. They have that authority. That actually is even addressed explicitly in the Gemara later on. And then he says, here's a little hakdama about communal leadership. So what does he say? Volunteer to read this, Romy? You want to read this for us? Did you get a chance to prepare this?
Yeah.
Okay, so read this for us. Because you're our poli-sci guy, so. Eitan also is, but you can start us.
Yeshiva Tuvei Ha'ir of his karm b'chol makom inam shiva anashim mukharim b'chachma v'osher b'kavur el shiva anashim shiva anashim shemidu hatzibur panasim stam al inyan ha'ir v'erim kapetrapsim alein.
Yeah, so two important things here. Number one, what's the first important thing?
That it's not good they're how smart or capable.
Yeah, it's not about their erudition or their scholarship or their wisdom or their capabilities. What matters?
That they were appointed.
Yeah. So I just want to just flag this right now, since the Rashba says explicitly, even in contemporary shuls, it's a very interesting question what halachic power the board and the president have as contrasted with, let's say, the rabbi of the shul. Right? Like, shuls make all sorts of political decisions. You could have somebody who is under criminal investigation. Who gets to decide whether that person is allowed to step foot in the shul? You have all these health questions about COVID now, right? Who gets to decide, like, who should be deciding that question? And what you see from these tshuvos with Rishonim is that oftentimes these questions don't turn on knowledge of halacha or wisdom. Right? It's really just that, like, who is chosen to represent the kahal? Yes? Yeah, and that's sometimes just like Shmuel said, that, you know, this part of the discussion, the Melech discussion, doesn't really exist. You might say it's very much neglected today in how communities are run. Maybe, I don't know, what's your sense?
Well, our communities aren't run on the Mishpat of Haiti, is it?
It's not this, and it's not this. It's like, so. Our communities aren't run on anything.
You want to be practical toward, like, whoever steps forward.
What?
My experience is
whoever's willing to be a president.
Like a pretty short list of people who are willing to
be. Right. So I think most people think, oh, the president is just the guy who makes the announcements.
Yeah, maybe. Do people have to know that what they're appointed for?
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
I would assume they do.
You think so?
Like,
well, that's the Yushami. The Yushami's whole point is that once you remana seven people stam, then they have authority over everything.
So yeah, again, is that assuming you know the Yushami or not?
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't think, I think if people said, it could be one thing if the shul board started making decisions about who would come to shul and all these COVID stuff, people would probably get very upset. They're like, what do you know? You're not you're not whatever.
Right, so you're saying the underlying intent is when they point, are they assuming that the rabbi is going to make those decisions? Were they memana the rav to make those decisions?
That's fair.
Or maybe they're reminding no one to make those decisions.
Kind of.
They think the government's
going to
make those
decisions. What it means is that when we say we're establishing board, is like you are letting us do, you know, sign a contract and go to it.
These are your powers.
Like, you know, you're appointing whoever you vote onto the board, or I guess it depends what exactly.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very good question. But I think the Yushalmi's whole point is that even if it's not expressly delegated, if the executive board, let's say, is seven members, or the board is seven members, minastam, that gives them the full authority. I think that's the pashup shot of the Yashami. Good, so number one is that it's the fact of their appointment. Elashiva nashim she'emidu hatzibur parnasim stam. Notice stam here also. Romy, I wonder if that takes a stance on that they don't need to be accorded these powers. They're just appointed generally as the parnasim of the community. Alan yane ha'ir.
Well, I thought it was stam as opposed to...
It could be this. They're thinking more, by the way, it could be to reinforce your point, they're thinking more in where the community is fully autonomous. Not where, like, most of the public goods, like the garbage and street cleaning and utilities, are determined by the local town council, right? But then it's an interesting question halachically. Does your local town council have these halachic powers in virtue of your voting for them to represent you on these issues, right? So in Manavshach, it's an interesting question, meaning, A, does it apply to the Beis HaKnesses nowadays? And if not, does it apply to whoever it is that you elect to make those types of decisions for your county? Okay. And then what's the second important thing here? So it's not that they're muvcharim b'chachma, but the fact that himidu matzibur parnasim aleihem. So both, those are two sides of the same coin. Okay, and he actually points us to the Tosefta, that the Tosefta calls them parnasim. Yes? What's a parnas? I guess a parnas is... like a trustee. Yeah. Okay. Then, so you can see here, actually, Romy, I thought this Hemshech here is of his interpretation of the Yushalmi. Kishamido leim b'tzibor shiva parnasim stam lefakeach alinyan aliske tzibor, then they have full control. But pachas mishiva ein b'kochan shavel liyosam kechol b'nei ha'ir, you know, they are considered. So translate that phrase for us.
Yeah, so if they're fewer than seven, if they haven't yet appointed seven people, then they don't have power, or they don't, right? They don't sufficiently represent
the entire
community.
Right. So if they're seven, then minastam they're considered to be speaking with the voice of the whole community. If they're less than seven, they need official appointment for that.
What does that mean? Because the people, even if there are four of them, they're also appointed, no?
Right, but then you'd have to say that we're appointing the four of you to have powers X, Y, Z, right?
So
they'd have to enumerate them.
What are the stam pairs?
Only for whatever is in the appointment letter. So you have the power to make announcements, right? And to decide how much we're going to pay the janitor. But if you have seven, then the thought is minastam, they have these broad ranging powers. Liosam kechol b'nei ayir. So what I want to drive home is two things, generally, from the Shu'as Rashba. Number one, this is all about the authority derives from their representing the Kahal. That's the Yiftach Bedoro thing is on Mordechai, but it's also pretty clear here. And number two, not only does their power derive from their representing the Tzibur, but number two is that they're thought to speak with the power of the Tzibur. Right, so...
Those two different.
What?
How are those two different?
So the basis of their authority is that they were given it by the Tzibur. Number two, the content of their authority is that they are considered to be the mouthpiece of the Tzibur. Okay. One is from what gives them their power. Number two, what is the substance of their power? It's that they have the Koach HaTzibur. Everybody see that? Yes? Okay. So let's now move. Those are the two things I want to take out of that Tshuva Sarashba for now. Let's look at this Tshuva of the Re'im, who I think adds even more color to this discussion. So Rabbi Mizrahi, I gave you a quick bio down here. He was born in the 15th century in Kushta. Where's Kushta?
Constantinople,
yeah. Yeah, Constantinople. Where's Constantinople?
Istanbul.
Yeah, Istanbul. That's right. Napoleon said that if there was a capital of the world, it's Constantinople. That's like that was the city that... It's the only city, I think, that straddles two continents. Europe and Asia. So.
Collapsing Jewish infrastructure.
What?
Collapsing Jewish infrastructure.
Yeah, there's nothing there now. There's tiny Jewish communities, like a few thousand Jews in all of Turkey. But once upon a time, it was a metropolis of Jewish thought. So what does the Mizrahi here say in Siman and Gimel? He talks about the power of the Tuvei Yair. He says, generally, if something is done in public, b'farhesia b'mamad anshei ha'ir, and nobody objects, d'v'chi ha'gavna ein hefresh bein das shiva Tuvei ha'ir, l'das kol ha'kohol. So this is like we saw in the Tshuva Sarashba. If nobody in the kahal objects to the decisions made by the Tuvei Ha'ir, then we could assume that they adequately represent the ratzon of the kahal. Okay. Aval, this is why this Tshuva is very fascinating. What happens when there's tension between what the Tuvei Ha'ir want? The Tuvei Ha'ir are elected by the people. And what the constituents themselves want. So it's like it's not like impeaching a representative, but it's what happens when there's a clear gap between the desire of the appointees and the people who appointed them. So what happens here? So somebody, Romy, why don't you continue about Kishayesh Mocha? Whoa. Right, so a lot packed in there. So number one, there's a very fascinating question that comes up in the Mizrahi. What happens when the representatives are at odds with the people who appointed them? So Josh gave me this look like I was from Mars a minute ago, and I said, from the Tshuva Sarashba, we get that their power comes from their being appointed by the people. And their authority is that they are deemed to speak for the kahal. Here it's clear those questions come apart, right? So the point here is, yes, they have their authority because they're appointed by the kahal, but in some cases, they lose the presumption that they're speaking for the kahal. And in those cases, they have no power. That's a very fascinating political theory. Because you might say, like, oh, if you appoint a president, he now has the authority for the next 4 years, and it's irrevocable, unless you impeach him.
even if like Rav HaKal gets up and says we don't want him to declare war against China, let's say. What the Mizrahi is saying is that the power of the Parnasa Yair exists only insofar as it remains consistent with the das of the Rav HaKal. But it's always the das of the Rav HaKal that's determinative, or that's decisive. Okay? Why is that?
So he says explicitly, so if Rav HaKal is not happy with what the Parnasim are doing, the Parnasim have no authority, ain't bedivrayim klum. Right, so let's say the shul board makes a decision, everyone has to wear masks. And then you put it to a general vote, right? And the general populace comes out against it. The Mizrahi would say that the shul board's takana has no power. Why is that? So what does he say? Masha yirtzu Rav HaKal hu ha'ikar, Romy?
That thing about the Beis Din is very fascinating. Saying the people themselves are considered the sovereign Beis Din on their own affairs. But notice he relegates it to which sphere of issues?
Shayachim Lakal.
It's a very interesting question. What does that mean? I would say it means the types of social things. So for all those types of social things, the people themselves are considered, the Bnei Yair are the Beis Din themselves. They happen to appoint people generally to speak on their behalf, but they're not bound to that. What really matters is the ratzon of the kahal, and the Shiva Tu Beir, if their das is inconsistent with the people who appointed them, the people who appointed them's das prevails. Okay, Josh, you have a comment on this?
I don't know if this is a real distinction, but to me this sounds...
And he says, V'tzarech lahamshech acharei rov deos hakahal, v'lo acharei tuvei hakahal. Right, so it's sometimes you call it a protanto. Authority, meaning the Tuvia calls, the authority is only insofar as it's consistent with their constituents. Sorry, Josh, go ahead.
To me, it sounds a lot less like people like getting together and like vesting authority in a representative, and more like Mechila. Like, it's one guy gets up and starts talking, and you don't tell him no, and then it's not really, it doesn't sound like the community really granted him power. It's more like, okay, if the guy's walking through my field, then I don't say anything, and then, sure, he has the right, but like, that's what it sounds like to me now.
Yeah. So you want to say there's not even like true representation? That's what you want to say?
And like pariah, like at any time.
You could always revoke it or show that you're at odds with it.
Fine, if they're not stopping him, then whatever.
But yeah, it's very interesting. So you want to get deep. We want to get deeper then into the Mizrahi's concept. What's the authorization in the first place? Right? Is it just...
Sounds like a hero, huh? Like letting someone else like get used in your field?
I think that's too weak. I mean, I think if one guy randomly got up, put up a kol kore and said... I think he says this later on, actually... That if some random person got up, we wouldn't view everybody else as being on board for that. But it's not. I think it's actually a different acronym, not him. But I do think in order to have the authority in the first place, you have to be authorized. So I do think it's more than Mechila. But you're right that paradigm shows you how weak the authority of the two Yair are in this case. Romy?
Yeah,
and then Daniel?
I have a similar thought. I think it is just so that it's like you're a public servant in the most real sense. So you serve, not like a, you know, you're really, really just there to serve the community. So as long as you're in the community, you get to have that role, and it's convenient for us that you make all the decisions for us and do all the things that we don't want to do. But you're only there to represent us. So if you're not serving us, you lose your role.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And except that, you might say there's a distinction between whether you're serving the kahal and whether you're in line with what the kahal wants. Because sometimes you might say the kahal doesn't know what's good for them. So you could have those types of cases. So I think it is closer, but it is like, the insofar your power is only insofar as you represent the das ha-kahal. Right, that's what I think. Zilti, you have a hand on this?
I'm not fully understanding that in terms of their aim. What exactly is the purpose of the
Tuvei Yair? That unless they're defeated by the Rav HaKahal, they're considered to represent the Rav HaKahal.
Why, like, if the Rav HaKahal, though, like, why don't you just have...
I think it probably just because it's too unwieldy to always have the Rav HaKahal voting on things.
It's convenient.
Yeah. I think it's convenient. It's efficient. But that's the point, right? There's no intrinsic power that the Tuvei Ha'ir hold separate from representing the das of the Rov HaKal. And maybe there's a presumption that unless there's a vote to the contrary, they represent the Rov HaKal's das, which is maybe where it's more than just mechila. Maybe. Yeah. Let me just make one last comment here, and then we'll all take a break for the day. Sorry. I just thought this very strong characterization was very good. He says, don't think that these two Be'ir are the Yoser Chachamim or the Yoser Zakenim or the Yoser Ashirim. Not sure anybody would think they're the Yoser Ashirim. But he says they are the Yoser Mishtadlim B'Tzarchei Tzibur. Shekol Tzarchei HaKol Nasu Al Yadam. Ve'enei Kol HaKol Kluyim Behemachol Tzarcheim. These are the people who provide the political and social goods to the community. Sidur Hatzdakos, they raise money for the shul, they raise money for the aniyim, and that's why they're called the Roshe HaKahal, because they take care of the communal needs. So it's the Askanim. And you can see here there's a halachic authority that's delegated to these people who take care of the social needs of the Kahal. And he says, why is this? Why is this power given not to the Chachamim, but rather to these Roshe HaKahal? So I think it's just like a very clear, again, you might say, in his paradigm, you have the Chachamim as the Shoftim and the Roshe HaKahal as the type of Mishpat HaMelech authority. Why is that? Because it's nothing to do with Chachma, he says. Because if you could have a smart person, but who's not Osek and Tzarchei Tzibur, ve'eno choshesh rak bilimudo, Why should he have political authority, right? Shehari aniye hakol v'chol hakol atzmo enei neim tluyos el lo oso shemis asik bitzarchem lo lo oso shehu osek bilimudo bilvad. Right, burned, right? He's saying, why in the world should the chacham who's osek bilimudo have political authority? Political authority comes from representing the das of the kahal. And so it's the person to whom the people turn for their social needs that wields that type of social power, not the person who's the master of the Gemara. Very sharp words, but I do think it's a very nice way of showing this clear-cut distinction between the two different halakhic interests. Yeah, closing thoughts? Zolti, sounds good?
Okay.
I think it's very nice Mizrahi. Anyone else have thoughts on the Mizrahi? Everyone just wants to go? Okay, we'll stop here.